This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And we begin with a very European flourish this hour, with the notes of composer Richard Wagner on a chase through Europe for much of the program. Europe with such a giant stamp on the history of the just past millennium, struggling today to maintain influence and prosperity into this one. There's a pro-Europe result from the latest polling out of Ukraine. CNN polls show that a large majority of the people of Ukraine want to remain independent of Russia and be a part of Europe, 67%. Of course, that is down from 90% from when Ukraine originally broke with the Soviet Union back in 1991. We will hear from a pair of journalists trying to tell the story of Ukraine when they are caught in the middle of its history. We'll also decode a poignant warning about our future from a largely forgotten European writer of the last century. And we finish this hour with one man's very personal journey across Europe and the world, retracing his uncle and grandfather's journey to Auschwitz, where they died in the Holocaust in 1942. But we begin with Europe's attempt to maintain the privacy of personal data in a moment when tech enterprises in the U.S. and Asia think of that data increasingly as a money-making commodity or a wide-open domain for surveillance. Joining us now, Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and professor of law at George Washington University Law School. Jeffrey, welcome back.
Great to be here.
So this seems like a pretty huge event in Europe. The High Court in Luxembourg rules that Google has to allow European users to take down files and texts and images that they may have posted. Plus, Europe is on a road to enshrine officially a right to be forgotten.
This is a huge deal, not only in Europe, but around the world. And it represents potentially the biggest clash between privacy rights and free speech rights of the modern era. Since 2012, Europe has been debating whether to adopt a broad right to be forgotten that would allow individuals to demand the deletion of truthful but embarrassing information about themselves merely because they don't like it. This case involved a Spanish man who wanted to delete an auction notice of his house, which was repossessed after he had to recover Social Security debts. And he sued a Spanish newspaper. The Spanish court said, no, that newspaper doesn't have to delete it. But then in this sweeping ruling, the Luxembourg court said that Google and Yahoo have to remove links to the story. What's so striking about this is how amorphous the standards are. Basically, it's now up to European privacy commissioners to decide whether information is in the public interest or not, when it's relevant, when it's been up too long. And because the tech companies can't know in advance whether or not a particular request is going to be granted, they'll have an incentive to remove stuff anytime anyone requests it. So if someone writes a blog post after our talk today saying that I've given a boring account of the case, I could demand that that blog post be removed if I were in Europe. And if Google and Yahoo guessed wrong, they'd be liable for a lot of money. So I'm a privacy guy to my bones, but this is a case where privacy and free speech are in conflict, and generally the American view of free speech is that this European sweeping view of privacy is a huge threat to free expression.
Sort of ironic that Europe, which probably has as much history as anyone they would love to forget, have this intuitive sense that we can erase the postings that have been on for years online and have a certain immortality to them. How is this enforceable on any level?
It's a great question, and it is deeply rooted in European history. This comes from a French right called the droit à l'oubli, or the right of oblivion, which is very French, of course. It seems to come right out of Sartre. But the French and the Germans have long said that if you have criminal history, for example, you can remove it after a certain amount of time because people should be able to have a second chance and not always be dogged by their past. So when the right was defined that narrowly, you could enforce it because you knew what the statute of limitations was, after which you couldn't refer to someone's criminal history. But this right, which where the standards are so broad, any time that I claim the data about me violates my privacy or dignity, I can potentially demand its removal. Would literally tie up the internet in knots. So it's the difficulties of enforcement that's one of the tech companies' strongest arguments against this. And it's just litigation on steroids. This will just open up a huge opportunity for aggrieved people who think that truthful but embarrassing information about them should be removed from Google to come down. And again, Google is saying this is going to transform us from a neutral search engine into a censor-in-chief, into an arbiter of what information is relevant or damages someone's dignity and whatnot. In the U.S., Google is immune from that judgment because of our Communications Decency Act, which doesn't make it liable for the content in post-its. In Europe, the situation is very different, and it's just going to transform the way Google and Yahoo and others operate in Europe if this decision is sustained and extended.
Well, the legal precedents are a little sketchy here. And internationally, you've described a very chaotic situation or a potential conflict between Europe and the rest of the world. But how does the law view speech that I post? I put up a picture. I can erase it from my own website. I can erase it from my own Facebook page. But how is that speech different legally from somebody else's post of my picture? Is that their speech or is that my speech? Does the law have any clarity there?
Great question. There are three categories, and they're treated differently in the U.S. and America. If I post something on Facebook, a silly picture of myself, I can take it down, no problem. Facebook's own terms of service allow me to do that. But let's say I post an embarrassing picture and it goes viral. It's widely shared. In the U.S., that would be considered other people's speech and would be protected. In Argentina, which applied an earlier version of this right to be forgotten, a pop star demanded the removal of racy pictures of herself that had gone viral, and an Argentinian judge actually ordered Yahoo to remove the pictures on the threat of a fine of a huge amount of money every day. So basically, she erased herself from history. She removed herself from the internet. If she'd been running for parliament, she could try to selectively rewrite the past. But then there's a third category of speech, and that's the stuff that was at issue in the case today. And that's just truthful but embarrassing stuff that other people write about as journalism, just straight on journalism. In the U.S., dating back to the days of Louis Brandeis, truthful but embarrassing information cannot be removed, you know, unless it's illegal or libelous or something like that. But in Europe, dignitary rights are more broadly protected, and there's a privacy directive which says that you can object to this kind of speech.
Sounds very 19th century, a decision out of Europe. Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and professor at George Washington University Law School. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Pleasure.
We also want to hear from you. Should you be able to erase your history on the internet? Do you think we should have the right to be forgotten online? Angie says this, yes. It's one thing to have them note how many times we went to a site, but it's another to have them tell every Tom, Dick, and Harry to go bug this person to death with ads, pop-ups, etc. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Tell us what internet history you'd like to erase, if anything. But I guess that would be like posting it again to our radio audience. Right, okay. Then just take our poll by visiting us at thetakeaway.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.